Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, Perinatal Support Strategies for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Parents Experiencing Complex Trauma, co-produced by CFCA and Emergent Minds. My name is Dana Shen, and I'm a social services consultant and cultural consultant for Emergent Minds. In today's presentation, we'll be exploring understandings and approaches to working effectively with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander families through the perinatal period. But before we get started, I wanted to acknowledge and recognise and pay respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as the traditional owners of the lands we work, play and walk on throughout this country. We acknowledge and respect their traditional connections to their land and waters, culture, spirituality, family and community, for the wellbeing of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and families. I also feel like I need to acknowledge the things that are going on in our world at the moment. I wanted to let people know, if you're from Sydney or Brisbane and Queensland and New South Wales, that if you're experiencing things with the floods, that we are thinking of you. And also just to recognise what's happening in the Ukraine and in other places in the world at the moment. So first of all, let's have a think about the learning outcomes so that we understand what it is that you can expect over the next hour. This webinar will support practitioners to extend their awareness of the historical and contextual factors impacting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, increase their understanding of the impacts of intergenerational trauma on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, understand the important role of service providers during the critical perinatal period for parents experiencing complex trauma, and finally, outline key principles and practice approaches for fostering safety in perinatal care. I just want to touch on a couple of things before we get to the main focus today. This webinar is part of a series of CFCA and Emerging Minds with a focus on infant and child mental health. Coming webinars, including responding to child mental health concerns in culturally and linguistically diverse communities, supporting children who have disclosed trauma, and also recent webinars that have happened, understandings and supporting infant mental health, supporting children's wellbeing when working with separating parents, and how to recognise complex trauma in infants and children to promote wellbeing. You might be interested to have a look at some of these. Okay, so I have this wonderful delight to introduce our panellists. So I'd like to introduce Valerie Archie, Kirsten McLean, Deborah Bowman, and of course my name's Dana, and I'll be facilitating the session today. So I just wanted to give our panelists a chance to say hello first before we get into the substance of the webinar. So Valerie, first, can you talk a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and one thing that gives you an inspiration in the world we live in today? Valerie.
Yeah, hi everyone. My name's Valerie Archie. I am a Bindirib woman from the southwest of Western Australia, one of the Noongar nations. I also have family ties to the Bulku people in the Pilbara, and I'm married to a Nyingana and Yari man from the Kimberley. I'm a midwife, I'm a mum, I'm a grandmother, and I have to say my inspiration is my mother, and also my granddaughters, my mother, for the changes she made and for the changes I want to see when my granddaughters are grown up. Thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Valerie. Kirsty, could you please let us know a bit about who you are and where you're from, and one thing that gives you an inspiration?
Oh, no worries. So I'm Kirsty. I'm a Mirawan Gadron woman from Kununurra, so that's up in the north of Western Australia. But I've been down here on Noongar Butcher for about 10 years now, so quite a while. My background is in medicine, so I'm currently a medical student completing my medical studies, but I am doing some research here. And I think for me, women's health is really important for me, because growing up with my family and all being, you know, quite having chronic illness, I think, and seeing the way that we are treated in the medical system, that's what inspires me to do this, to start empowering our mob in our medical system. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thanks, Kirsty. And Deborah, can you say a little bit about yourself and where you're from and what gives you inspiration?
Hi everyone, my name is Deb. I'm a Nambar woman from Brewarrina in New South Wales, and I'm currently here on the lands and waterways of the Wadi Wadi, Wandi Wandandi and Jarringer people of the Eora Nation. I guess a bit of my background is I've worked in disability, I've been a counsellor, and now lucky to be working with University of Melbourne as a research assistant. So I guess what inspires me is, my mum has inspired me a lot throughout my journey and my life. The way we Aboriginal people, I guess, are treated in the healthcare and education system. So, that really inspires me for the work that, that I do today.
Thanks so much, Deborah, and welcome to all of you. And we're so glad to be with everybody that's listening today to the webinar. So we're going to move on to the main focus of the webinar now. And I want to hand over to Deborah in the first instance to, first of all, give us a bit of an introduction around her work and in particular, healing the past by nurturing the future. Deborah.
Thanks, Dana. Hello, everyone. I'm part of the Yenemba unit at University of Melbourne, and the name of our unit is a Woi Wurrung word meaning love and spirit that was given by Wurundjeri elder Aunty Joy Murphy in 2005, and it reflects the idea of well-being that is central to the work of the unit. So it was established in 1999, and it was then known as the Vic Health Career Health Research and Community Development Unit, and it has a long history of community engagement as we prioritise the co-design of research into Aboriginal health and wellbeing. And that work, carries on today. So I guess the next slide. So the Healing the Past by Nurturing the Future is one of our key projects and recognises that pregnancy, birth and the transition to parenting can be a critical period for parents from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities who have, been impacted by complex and intergenerational trauma. So when we speak of complex and intergenerational trauma, we often recognise this is the impact, the negative impact that it has on both our social and emotional wellbeing for our parents. But, rather than focus on the negatives, our research takes a strengths perspective and acknowledges that there's a lot of positive work that can be done with our parents during the perinatal period. Because that's a period of transition, which can create opportunities for positive change. What we do know, though, is that it's important that practitioners and service providers who support parents through this transition have the understandings and expertise to provide a culturally and emotionally safe care, especially where parents are experiencing that trauma and emotional wellbeing challenges. I think next, our co-design research has led to the recognition that parenthood appears to be the only natural turning point at which negative life course trajectories can be altered for parents. And those first couple of years are also a time of key development for the baby. At the same time, parents are attending frequent scheduled contacts with service providers. So this then offers a unique opportunity for those practitioners to ensure parents' self-care experiences are safe and not re-traumatising. Being able to identify the risks of social emotional wellbeing issues. And, by changing the narrative, I guess, and the language to what has happened to you rather than what is wrong with you, allows people to stay descended as the experts of their lives and separate them from their problem stories. So listening to those drama stories and the strong stories of resilience and mutual understanding and acceptance, there is a window of opportunity for service providers to offer culturally specific support that empowers our Aboriginal parents to thrive and interrupted cycles of intergenerational trauma. So being kind and compassionate to our ways of being allows for shared learning and allows us to yarn with a purpose and with meaning. So having new beginnings and fresh start, changing roles and feeling connected to be given compassionate care, which empowers our choices, creates safety and a trusting environment. So the diagram with the basket, the grasses, the weave and the basket represent the collective nature of connectedness, well-being and parenting. So the grasses from which the baskets are made grow from country and represent connectedness to place and culture. The weave facilitates the grasses' transformation into a basket and relies upon generational transferred Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander knowledge and cultural practices. So handing down knowledge and sharing knowledge. So without knowing how to weave, a basket cannot be made. The painting on the right is around generations, and how those generations stay connected through our ancestors and generations over time. Now, there's so much love for our babies, and this can be a very sacred time for families to nurture, bond and connect to celebrate new life and new beginnings. It is sometimes, I've grown up believing that, when there's birth, there could sometimes be sorry business as well. So, it's that that life cycle of, life, death, life. So, our babies and connection to our ancestors that somehow come back and share that wisdom through our little ones. Next. So the Healing the Past, Nurturing the Future project is Aboriginal-led, community-based action research project. And it co-designs perinatal strategies to support our parents experiencing complex trauma. So we are working to identify strategies that are considered acceptable to Aboriginal parents and feasible for our service providers. So the piloting, implementation and evaluation of the effectiveness of perinatal strategies take place following this formative design stage that's pictured there. So the four domains of perinatal care is around awareness of the impact of the trauma on parents, or trauma-aware perinatal care, to minimise the risks of triggering and compounding trauma responses. The safe recognition of parents who may benefit from assessment and support with processes to reduce risk of harm. Assessment of complex trauma symptoms to accurately identify parents experiencing distress, and support strategies for parents to heal, including psychological, emotional, social, cultural and physical. So communication, trusting relationships and continuity of care are important factors in minimising the trauma. So positive descriptions of care involve respect, empathy, compassion, understanding, personalised, individualised care, asking people for permission before touching them, being gentle and engaging as individuals. So providing culturally safe spaces, building trusting relationships, deep listening and understanding. Being present in the moment is really important. Being strength-based, trauma-informed and culturally aware. And being culturally responsive as well can support the prevention of intergenerational transmission of trauma. So we find that practitioners need to gain a deeper understanding of the values and principles that underpin Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander childcare rearing practice. So this will create opportunities for both ways learning. We have recently developed some online learning modules for practitioners who are keen to develop their learning in this space, and they can be found on the Emerging Mind website right now. They've actually gone live last week, I think, and people can access those right now. That's me. Thanks, Donna.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Deborah. I know that people will have questions coming through, and we've certainly had previous ones when people were registering. So we will explore some of what you said in just a moment. Thanks so much, Deborah. I now want to hand over to Kirsty and Valerie to talk us through the program that they are working with, Baby Coming You Ready.
Thanks, Dana. me and Kirsty are both, I just want to acknowledge that me and Kirsty are both zooming in from Wadjuk Wudja, and we pay our respects to elders past, present as well. So Baby Coming You Ready is a new way to help support the social and emotional wellbeing of First Nation parents. It came about from community responding to the fact that perinatal mental health outcomes weren't improving, and it was seen as a better way, or possibly be a better way, to screen Aboriginal parents in the perinatal period and replace the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Score, which we know is culturally irrelevant and culturally unsafe. Thank you. You can keep going, Dana. I did a quick acknowledgement. Thanks. So we're going to go straight into the statistics. With Aboriginal women and distress. So we know that a third of young Aboriginal women report high distress, and it's double the rate of non-Aboriginal women. Concerningly, 30% of WA Aboriginal infants born to a mother with a hospital mental health contact, whether that be as an inpatient or through emergency. We know that the rates of mental distress are rising, and we also know that research shows Aboriginal women are being underscreened and poorly managed, and on top of that, not being screened in a way that is relevant to them. Next. So this slide, I actually really, really love this slide. It's quite simple in the message that it's trying to send. And as Deb was sort of laying this foundation as well with intergenerational trauma. So this is basically just a picture of a grandmother being pregnant, and also, as we know, female babies are born, the eggs are in utero when they're developing. So this is just a quick snapshot that we know culture starts in the womb, that whatever the mum is feeling, the babies are experiencing, and this is transmitted onto into generations. And it's not a big jump to actually acknowledge and recognise that what happened to my grandmother affected my mother, and what happened to my mother, you know, is affecting me and my children. So this is just a really, really quick snapshot of a visual, a way of seeing this transmission. But I also want people to remember as well that while intergenerational trauma is being transmitted through the generations, resilience and strength is also being transmitted as a buffer to this trauma. And that's really important to remember. Next. So as my scope is midwifery, and so working in perinatal mental health, you sort of have to realise the responsibility that you carry working with families who are affected by trauma, especially so in the perinatal period, because it's such a vulnerable time. And this is a trauma tree picture that all I want to say here is that the green watering can is the way that professionals who are working with vulnerable people can re-traumatise in a system that is, we know, is culturally unsafe. And they can do this by not recognising and perpetuating power inequities, ignorance, not recognising the cultural diversity between individuals and communities, the assumptions and bias that we have, labelling women, and we know that this happens, and labelling families, judgments, passing judgments on women who come into their care, and we know that racism exists in the health system and that it continues to re-traumatise vulnerable families. So it's really important here to just remember what role we play and to absolutely check ourselves when we are caring for families and to see how we can improve our care and to make sure that we don't perpetuate this cycle of trauma when we are caring for families. Next. Thank you. This slide is another quick snapshot of the proportion of hospital discharges against medical advice by Indigenous people. This to me is a reflection, is totally a reflection of the system and not of the person. We know that Aboriginal people discharge when they don't feel safe, when they don't feel listened to, when they feel disrespected, when they feel that they have been judged, and when they experience racism. And this slide shows that Aboriginal people are leaving the system in droves. It's happening in my family, and I know that it is a reflection of the system, and this is what needs to change. How can we make sure that when Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people are seeking health, that they are actually being cared for in a way that will help with healing and not, you know, and not in a way that's not going to help healing, because we know that health and healing are different for different people as well. And then they're not, and that they do sometimes exist in separate scopes. Next. So I'm going to pass over to Kirsty, but I think it's really important here to know that Baby Coming You Ready was developed by community in response to community issues. Thanks, Kirsty.
Yeah, so exactly. Just like what Val had been saying, Baby Coming You Ready is developed by community, and not just community, but we've had elders, and then we've also had community involvement with mums, dads who are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, and then non-Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are practitioners, managers, and health workers. So if we go on. So this is really important, actually. Design, part of Baby Cummings' design, is it's really been community led, and that's in taken a really long time, about 6-7 years now. It's been in the making, and we've just started piloting, but it's an iPad app that we've had designed for non-Indigenous practitioners that will help them enhance their practice, so that we're giving back control to our mums, because we want to empower our community to feel like when they're coming back, each time they're learning new things and they are feeling empowered to say, you know, I actually want something else, or this isn't good for me. So, and yeah, we've also, Baby Coming, it also screens for family and domestic violence, alcohol and drug, and this a general social emotional well-being assessment. So it's a really holistic look at a mum's life. So if we move on to the next slide. Yeah, and you can see it's supposed to be used with a practitioner in a yarning style. You sit side by side, and it's a time for you to share your journey as well, because it's really important for Aboriginal people to feel like they're connecting with their practitioners, or that the practitioners or professionals, you know, really genuinely care. So we've got, the Baby Coming app, which will look at, FDV and alcohol and drug, and do a K5+2 instead of the EPDS. And if we move on to the next one, you can have a look. It's an image-based app with voiceovers on each side. Oh, this is also, we have a Baby Coming You Ready website that's available to the general public. Anyone can go on here, so I'd encourage everyone to do that. You can have a look at our mums page. This provides information that mums and dads said that they weren't really receiving when they'd gone to the doctors. So the mums tab has stuff that's about fetal movements and other things to do with Bob, and dads also look after them. And then you can see in the practitioners, that's a side that contains training for the people that are using Baby Coming. And that training is based on trauma-informed care and the effect of colonization on our current medical system. So yes, if we move on, we can have a look at some of the and the resource tabs. This is actually really good. You can access that on our site as well. And you can, these are all services that are Aboriginal specific services that support cultural safety. And you can look via location nearby you, things like accommodation support or breastfeeding support, counselling, that kind of stuff. So this is a really good resource to find specific supports that your mum may need. So on to the next tab. Yeah, so this is the front page of Baby Coming You Ready. You can see we have a voiceover, and into the next page. This one just introduces it. And then you can see we have the image based with voiceovers explaining things in a really nice maternal voice or a peer sounding voice explaining the questions. And we've had artists do really nice images that show the, sorry, Valerie, would you mind jumping in?
So we've tried to capture the diversity that Aboriginal communities and people may experience. And, you know, we've tried to capture every sort of lived experience that may be relevant to Aboriginal women and fathers and their families. Baby Coming You Ready has, this is absolutely, absolutely strengths-based. And for, and the one thing that we need to remember with Baby Coming You Ready is this woman is sitting in front of you telling you who she is and not the other way around. So you, the practitioner actually has to sit and be present and listen, and the woman will tell you and share with her what she needs. We have skip logic embedded, so anything that's not relevant to the woman is not going to come up and won't have to be discussed. And that's a really, really, that's something that the elders really wanted embedded into Baby Coming You Ready. It was really important.
Yeah, and as mums work through it with the clinicians are there to kind of support them through it and try and encourage yarning so that you can begin to incorporate a more yarning style practice. So if we move on to the next tab. Yeah, and you can see here, these are some of the images that we have that are really strength-based and really nice to see. And I think it's good for mum to just be able to see themselves represented in a nice way, because when you have a look in most health handouts, you will see a lot of risks and a lot of representations in those ways, but not in a strength-based way. So yeah.
And just before we move on, I think it's important to remember as well that, you know, if you do have a really good strong relationship with your mother or someone in your life, that's actually a really important buffer to the stress and distress women and dads may be experiencing. So
yeah. So you can see that women, when they go through the app, they get to choose all of the things that keep them and babies strong, and they come up on this strong tree of life. And then you can see some of the worries that the mums may have had throughout. And this is really good because it gives you a visual representation of the thing, the supports and the support system that someone has, and then they can focus on a couple of the worries and think about starting to help change that. So Baby Coming isn't just a screening app, it's also a brief intervention where we can start to help mums move forward and access the support they need. Yeah, so if we go on to the next slide, you can see this is, so instead of the PDS, we're having, we're doing the K5 plus 2 distress scale. We had some focus groups and elders come in and have a look at the many different screenings that are available for depression, and they've chosen these as the most relevant questions. And we have the smiley face scaled. Yeah. And then at the end, this is all reported in our clinical event summary. So this is good. The mum goes through the app. She clicks everything that's going on in her life. So it is an accurate representation of what the mum wants to work on in her life. And you can see in the clinical event summary, this is, it's all laid out in this afterwards for clinicians to understand, and priority tables so that you can see what's going on in the mum's life.
And all of that information that's documented, because everything the woman has selected, allows the practitioner to actually really be present, because she doesn't have to be documenting while she's listening to the woman. Mm-hmm. Everything that's selected is generated in the end of in the clinical event summary. So the documentation is done for the practitioner, because a lot of the time we're sitting with the woman and we're worrying about the next woman we have to see, because we know that the system is overloaded. So this is a real, as much as we know that baby coming ready needs a standalone appointment, and that may be an issue for some settings. This is how, in the end, it sort of balances out, because the practitioner doesn't have to actually document while she's, you know, listening to the woman.
Yeah. And so far we've been piloting baby coming in the Wheat Belt and a few different services in the Perth Metro area. And it's been going really well. It takes a little bit of time to get baby coming incorporated into a service. That's just, you know, training and having it brought into general practice instead of using the EPDS. But when we've had practitioners do it, they've come back with really good feedback. And yeah, you can have a read of it there. So thank you all.
And just before we finish, I do want to say that Baby Coming Ready is a very adaptable tool. And when I say that, I mean that if a community feels like they would like to use this, it can be absolutely adapted to be to reflect their community and their language and everything like that. So it's very flexible. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been designed to be adaptable to each community, because each community is different throughout Australia. And what we're hoping with Baby Coming is that each time it is implemented into a new community, that people are engaging the elders beforehand, ensuring that there is community input to it before it's implemented, because that's how it's been done the whole time here on Wadjuk Ngambwija and over in the Wheat Belt. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Kirsty and Valerie, talking about Baby Coming You Ready. We're now going to go into our Q&A discussion, which includes previous questions that have been asked by registrants, but also questions that are coming through now. I'm just going to quickly, I've just seen some that have come through, which I know are easier ones to answer. So we'll just start with those first. So this is a question for Kirsty and Valerie. So people are asking about the availability of Baby Coming You Ready. And is the screening designed for medical practitioners only? I wondered if you could briefly answer where the stages of this process is up to for this project.
That's a really good question, actually. It's not for medical practitioners only, actually. We've been having social workers do it. We've had psychologists that have been interested in doing it. We really like to have the Aboriginal Health Liaison Officers that are working in the midwifery practices to implement it as well. So I think it's for any professional that is working with vulnerable Aboriginal communities that might need a social emotional wellbeing assessment.
I agree. It's not while we know that the majority of medical professionals are non-Aboriginal, and until that, you know, that parity is improved, the onus is on non-Aboriginal practitioners to actually up their game and find ways of delivering culturally safe care. However, having said that, we also know that in the system, the biggest resources for cultural safety and security is Aboriginal health workers. In the absence of, you know, Aboriginal doctors, midwives, nurses. So we absolutely want Aboriginal health workers to be trained in how to use it as well, because they are the grassroots people that are the frontline workers in Aboriginal communities. So it would make it wouldn't make sense not to have the outside of that medical scope, not to have other people being trained in how to use it. Absolutely.
Currently, Baby Coming is only in its pilot phase, though, so it's not available for individuals to use in their practice, but we will be doing a statewide trial, I think maybe at the end of next year. We'll see how it goes, yes.
And you know, this pilot is giving us an opportunity. Yeah, sorry, Kirsty.
No, go on.
The pilot is also giving us an opportunity to see how baby coming is real time in the real world, and you know, addressing all the little issues that may not be working at this time, and sorting those out prior to the trial. So yeah, it's a really important pilot. Yeah, for getting all of that feedback, and we're getting lots of feedback. It's great. Yeah.
Right. Thank you. Now, one of the things that I really observed as I was looking at both of your presentations is how beautiful it is. The imagery, the pictures, things that reflect our culture, you know, et cetera. Why is this so important that this is there? And Deb, I wondered if I could start with you. Why are this imagery, these symbols, why is it so important in this work?
I think it connects with people in a way that, you know, for storytelling, every picture has a storytelling and a different meaning for each person. So, you know, having imagery there for people to connect with and for people to, you know, draw their own stories, whether, you know, their strengths and, you know, their, you know, some of their hopes and dreams come from those pictures as well too. So I think, you know, that's really important to have those images.
Thanks, Deb. And Kirsty or Valerie, did either of you want to mention anything more about the imagery in Baby Coming You Ready? There's such a beautiful, yeah. We can see ourselves in it.
Yeah, is that okay, Kirsty? I'll have a go. I think, you know, Aboriginal people are visual people, you know, we look at things and it resonates within us. And for me, art is a therapy. And I also know that the health system, you know, we aren't really reflected in many positive ways within the health system. And a lot of the time when we are, you know, when there is things in the health system that's supposed to represent Aboriginal people, it's very risk-based, and it's, for me anyway, it's sending messages of what is wrong with us, you know, rather than how deadly we are. So for me, the imagery is really positive, and it's very reflective of so many lived experiences, you know, the good and the bad. And it's very, very woman, you know, woman and family centered, which is really important as well.
Thanks, Valerie.
I think too, we need to remember, you know, through generations that a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people weren't given access to education. So, you know, we need to, you know, have that as a reminder too that, you know, our feelings and our stories and our emotions are reflected through those images, and, you know, every image tells a story.
Thanks, Deb. Another question that's come up in from people that are participating today is really trying to understand how can service providers best talk about trauma in the right way with families? How do we do that in the right way? Deb, I wonder if I could start with you. You know, how do you do it in a sensitive way, you know, with mums and families?
I think being culturally aware, being connected to your community, knowing what's going on in your community, you know, having a genuine interest, I guess, and, you know, we need to, you know, practitioners sometimes need to decolonise their thinking and you know, be I guess, more informative in finding out ways that, you know, they can engage with their community, and when they do, ways that they can keep community coming to their service for support. So, yeah, I think it's, yeah, being culturally aware and culturally responsive within their communities.
Thanks, Deb. Valerie, how about for you? Like, what is the most sensitive ways to have conversation around trauma? Like, that's tricky.
Yeah, I think it's different for everybody, but within my own practice, you know, I think it's really acknowledging
and recognising that trauma exists in the first place, that it does affect people and it affects people differently, and it actually, the symptoms manifest differently, and the symptoms, you know, the symptoms of trauma are specific to each individual, and each individual will do what they need to get through each day. So actually recognising that trauma is different for everybody, and knowing that, you know, many, many people walk around having experienced trauma, and at whatever point in time, they may not have actually recognised that they have trauma as well. I know that it took me a lot of years of my life and to get to a space where I actually recognise the trauma within myself and where it came from and how it manifested in my life. So I think, you know, as a practitioner, to absolutely listen and recognise the many, many, many symptoms of trauma when, you know, for that person who may be in front of you. And sometimes you just have to sit and be okay with silence, you know, and let somebody trust you enough to actually share with you what their trauma is for them, you know. Yeah.
Thanks, Valerie. Thanks. Another question that's come through through people that are online right now is this one, and it's really referring to psychologists and counsellors, and ask the question, you know, where is the line to connect through yarn whilst not making it about our experiences? So what's that kind of boundary around self-disclosure? Yeah, I'm just really wondering about your views on that. Kirsty, did you have a view about that?
It's interesting. I think make sure you're not talking more than the person in front of you, I guess, is one easy way of doing it. I think it's important to definitely share, but you want to, you want to make sure that the other person is also getting the chance to share. So bits and pieces here, like, oh, I'm also from Wadjuk Ngabujur, or things like that, is really good. And I think, what do you think, Belle?
Yeah, I think understanding that's going to take time and patience as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that a lot of people can't sit with silence. It can be quite awkward, and so they feel like they have to feel that silence, and I'm guilty of that myself. I feel it by talking about me, and it probably wasn't, in fact, I know it probably wasn't appropriate. But, you know, you actually learn from that. It's actually saying to yourself that if I can learn something from this, that's okay. I feel like, to me, the most important thing is to actually build the relationship, so you get to a point where that person trusts you enough to actually let you into their life, and not take over and be sincerely present and listen and listening, and then, you know, working together to come up with a plan that is like reflective of what that person needs and not something that you thought up. You know, we are the expert in our own life. We need to be able to tell you what we need to heal and move on and move forward. And you need to, you know, support us to do that. I hope that answers the question. Yeah, it did.
Thank you so much. Deb, another question that has come up is around, how do you kind of create safe spaces and interactions with families? How do you create that cultural safety? What do you have to do to make sure that happens, Deb? I'm just wondering if you had any thoughts about that.
You know, I worked at an Aboriginal women's organisation in Nowra called Wominda, and there was a lot of ways we can create those safe spaces, and it's around making the space, but letting the women that came in there that access the service to create the space for the way they need it. And it's really looking at what's in that space, putting in things that have meaning and have connection to Aboriginal people. And I think I think the biggest thing is changing our language. Sometimes you know, you get, you know, you can go into a space and it's around, you know, what is wrong with you, instead of, you know, what has happened to you, you know, what can we do to, you know, create that space for you to come and sit and be comfortable, you know, offering, you know, food, a kappa. You know, it's always nice to sit and yarn over a kappa, and I think just being present in the moment and just really listening to that person that presents there on that day, and you know, really focusing on what their needs are at that time, and just being with them. Yeah, I'm sure Val and Kirsty will.
Yeah, did you have something to add, either Kirsty or Valerie?
Yeah, I agree with Deb. You know, it's about making sure that when Aboriginal people come into a space that they feel like they belong there. You know, that's really important, you know, to find connection, to find meaning, to find reflection, you know.
And to just bring the whole mob along as well, you know. If we bring our whole family along to an appointment, it's, you know, some of them, they're there for a reason, the kids, you know. So don't feel put out about that. Yeah, be really welcoming and open to having lots of people.
Sorry, Kirsty. Sometimes it's nice, you know, letting them know that they can have someone with them that, you know, that can support them if they need that support as well.
Right. Yeah, thanks so much, all of you. Another question that's come up, and I know that you touched on this in your presentation, Kirsty, was the being able to think about brief interventions for people, you know, that particularly in crisis. Can you talk a little bit more about how Baby Coming You Ready is doing that, is aiming to do that?
Yes, so Baby Coming You Ready is aiming to do that by identifying when women need support. So it's helping the practitioner do that. And then we have the resources page, and we also provide food bank. We also have food bank rights, so women can go and get food bank cards and stuff like that. So instead of just screening like we would do with an EPDS, you'd screen and then you'd refer off to someone else to do something, right? At the end, you can create a plan with your mum after looking at your strengths-based trees and your worries, and you can go towards doing taking the first kind of steps towards making a change for mum. So, yeah. It's good in that we can start doing some motivational interviewing as well. There's the space in there for that. Val, did you have something to say?
Yeah, I did have something and it's gone out of my head. Hey, but I was thinking, that was it. There is a bit of a cultural divide when it comes to worries. Like, I think one good thing about Baby Coming You Ready is that the woman will identify what worries her, not you. And she will, you know, tell you, like, having biggest mob people in the house, it may not be a worry to her. I know that for some non-Aboriginal practitioners, that can be like, oh my God, this house is overcrowded, and it can be an issue. But if it doesn't worry her, is that something that you should, you know, continue pressing her on? This is the thing with Baby Coming. The mum is going to identify her worries. So with the brief intervention, it could be, and motivational interviewing, because a lot of practitioners, and I absolutely had no idea about motivational interviewing. It took me a lot of learning to actually get my head around it and the stages of change, because we're all at different stages of change in our life. So it's about if a woman does share a worry with you, how the brief intervention part is, how can we plan together to actually make those worries less of a worry? You know, what can we do? And it might be something just as simple as, oh, you know, food insecurity. Well, we, Baby Coming You Ready has, like Kirsty said, referring rights, so the woman doesn't have to go be referred to an external third charity to get like food bank assistance. The midwife or the social worker or the nurse can, or the health worker can refer her straight from the clinic. And it sort of, you know, it gets rid of that third party, and it gets rid of another obstacle or barrier so that she can get food. You know, it's sometimes as simple as that.
Yeah. And I think if I think about, because we've got so many people online that are coming from all different professions, I would say that the transferability of the things that you've just said are basically that you're listening to the person in front of you about what they need and when they need it. And you're that's what you're paying attention to. And you're going to try to do what you can to get the barriers out of the way of access. That's
100%. That's it.
Yeah. Beautiful.
The last thing we want to do is make someone's journey harder. That's the last thing we want to do is put up more obstacles and barriers. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Another question that came through too is really about working with young mums and new mums and the kinds of things that are important to kind of think about in there. So I don't know, particularly from your midwife background, Valerie, were there particular things that you think are important, particularly, you know, with new mums that have got some, you know, level of isolation in their lives? Maybe they don't have lots of family or connections, you know? What do providers need to think about?
I know there's lots of movements around the country that's, you know, delivering really good continuity of care. There's Aboriginal specific maternity group practices that are around the country that are doing amazing jobs as well. And I feel like within my own experience, you know, and within my own family, not as a midwife, but as a nana and as an auntie, if I feel like you have to, if you are working as a midwife and young Aboriginal mums come to you, I think the number one obligation for me is from their first presentation in clinic, pregnant, to me that tells me that they are here, they're excited about their baby, and they want, you know, they want to feel that excitement and empowerment. And the last thing you should do is, like, if they are a teenage mum or a young mum, the last thing you should do is let your judgments and carry into your delivery of care. From that moment, it should be all about empowering and information and, you know, everything that they need so that by the time the baby comes, they know they're going to smash it, you know, and making sure that, because I know that while there are Aboriginal midwifery group practices and specific Aboriginal maternity, you know, clinics, there's not enough. So when you are in that scope, to making sure that you absolutely use the resources that you have at hand, and Aboriginal health workers, Aboriginal maternal infant care workers, you know, they are the most valuable resource between the clinic and the community and the woman. You know, I can't stress that enough. You know, they are really important. Deb, Kirsty.
Yeah, I agree with you, Val. It's around that holistic wraparound care that, you know, that we want for our mums and our bobs, and, you know, being able to sit down and, you know, let her be in that decision-making process and, you know, what's good for her, you know, what her needs and wants are, and how she will, you know, go forward, I guess, for the future for her bob.
Yeah. And to her power. Yeah. And birth is powerful, you know, and it should be transformative. And, you know, it's a rite of passage, you know, birth, and you want women to go into it feeling like they can do it, you know. So make sure that your care delivers that, and regardless of the issues, because at the end of the day, birth is birth, and yes, there might be these different levels of risk or whatever, but supporting that woman to birth and birth powerfully is gonna make waves, I believe. I believe that birthing powerfully is something that will, you know, make waves in a woman's life, you know, and in her children and her partner, especially if her partner sees, you know, dads are really important too.
Yeah, and I think that often gets overlooked too, is dads, you know, so we need to, you know, make sure we bring them into the picture and, you know, empower them, see them as a dad and not, you know, not all everything else that they get labelled with, you know. There's some really great dads and great role models, and, you know, we need to build on that and empower them for, you know, for our strong families.
We actually, baby has a dad's rubric as well. So while we're focusing on mums at the moment, if we have a mum and dad come in, they're absolutely welcome to do the dad side of the rubric. It's quite similar, but we just don't have, we're not collecting data from that or anything. So that's also still like in the works.
Well, thanks so much for all the things that you're doing at the moment. As I said earlier, the first question I really want to pose to the three of you, you mentioned a couple of times decolonizing our thinking, decolonizing systems. I wondered if you could each talk a bit more about what that means to you. Deb, what does decolonizing mean to you?
For me, I think it's breaking down the discourses of racism and colonization that, you know, that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have been oppressed by for many, many years. So I guess recognising that Australia has a black history and, you know, really wanting to, I guess, understand or... No, I don't think I'm answering this right. sorry.
You are. Deb, though, you're answering it right. It's your view, so yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's the biggest thing is recognising that there is a black history here in Australia and accepting that, you know, events like Australia Day just doesn't sit with Aboriginal people. Now we need to look at ways of changing those days and, you know, being inclusive for everyone to share.
Yeah, thanks, Deb. Thank you. And how about Kirsty? What does decolonising mind or services or systems mean to you?
I think decolonising is definitely something that every individual person has to do just in general because we live in a colonised system. And so part of doing that, I think, is to confront your own internal biases. We all have them. You need to confront them and acknowledge that you have internal bias. And then you can work from there. So educating yourself, being willing to listen and acknowledge and respect the knowledge of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and being able, I think, in practice, decolonising is to take a step back from that really paternalistic practice and giving power to your mum or dad, to your client, giving the power back to them. They know what's best for them and they know themselves the most. Yeah, so I think it's saying that you don't know everything.
Yeah, thanks, Kirsty. And finally, Valerie, your view about that. What does it mean for decolonising?
It's really because I think in some way we all do it, we try and all do something anyway. To for me as an individual, my own mind, it's processing what's happened to my family, my community, my culture. It's I know what happened. I understand why it happened, but I actually have to process it, accept, but then find my own way back to connecting. You know what I mean? Like Noongar people were really, really, really affected. I mean, sorry, Dana, everybody was affected, but my own stories with Noongar people. And so processing what happened and how I can reconnect back to my Noongar knowledges and culture and actually bringing those knowledges into my day-to-day living and my day-to-day practice, you know, moving on and taking everything I can. This is really hard, Dana.
Yeah, it's a big question.
Yeah, And I think with this, I think I might just move on to the system is you know, actually suspending your cultural lens and applying a different cultural lens to the system and actually seeing it through, you know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's eyes, and how it can be changed to suit what they need to heal and be healthy, because it's different. It, you know, even the view of health and healing is different between like the dominant culture and what Aboriginal people need to heal. And I guess that's part of the decolonisation as well, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And valuing Indigenous knowledge is, valuing.
It's a two-way sharing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, we're just going to go through some of the other participant questions. And Deb, I wanted to start with you. Are there any labels we should avoid that re-traumatise or leave people discharging against advice? You know, the language we use, the way we talk about people, etc. Deb, I just wondered if you had a view about that.
Labels. You know, as a narrative practitioner, people are labelled every day. And labelled in so many ways that they start believing that they are that label. So, you know, definitely the language has to change in our health and education systems to build our people up, to know that, you know, we're human as well. You know, we're not seen as a thing. We're not seen as, you know, we're not all in, you know, we see one bad black person and we're all labelled as being the same. So getting those labels off, and this is really hard, you know. You know, labels throughout my life, and you know, the hurt and the pain and the emotions that you go through is so difficult. We need to really, you know, look at that language and address that language. And people need to recognise, you know, mainstream people need to recognise that we are people too. We do have feelings. We do have emotions, and everyone's individual, everyone's unique. I don't know what else to add to that, really.
No, I think what I'm hearing, and I think it's important that participants note what's happening, is that you're actually speaking from lived experience aspects of what you're talking about, and as Valerie was and Kirsty is as well. So, you know, you're talking about the things that have affected you as an Aboriginal person, as well as what it might be when you look across at a system. So I just wanted to recognise that.
Yeah, because we can't separate that, can we, either?
That's right.
You know.
Okay, so there's a few more questions. So just a few more questions that have been posed. And the first one is for Kirsty. Once identified, how do practitioners help with some of the non-health issues? You know, I guess we call it non-medical, maybe, non-health. Such as overcrowding, you know, some of the social issues, etc. How do practitioners best help with this?
Well, I think the first thing to help with is it actually something that needs help with? Does the mum or your client want this? Do they consider it overcrowded, or do you consider it overcrowded? Going from there, I think the best thing to do is you've got a mum sitting in front of you and she's got certain needs or supports that are needed. But one of the things that makes it really hard for us not to access all of them is having to go from different institution to different institution to access all of the supports we need. Because often we'll come in and you'll get referred to three different other services, and that makes it really hard. So I think the best thing you can do to try and help support someone when it's non-health related things is to be able to take away some of those barriers for them. So instead of getting them to call to get a psychologist appointment, you call and book this psychologist appointment. Can you help arrange someone to take them there? Can you help arrange transport to go and get food parcels or things like that? So if you can take away as much of that extra work and little things that build up when you're referring patients or when you're referring mums, I think that's the best way to go.
Great, thank you, Kirsty. Oh, now we've got some baby coming you ready specific questions. So, Valerie, I wondered if you could answer the first one. Is it okay for non-Aboriginal people to use the BCYR app with Aboriginal women?
I think you're on mute.
Absolutely. It was actually designed to be utilised by non-Aboriginal health professions as well, because that was where the issues were, you know, around practice and how to deliver culturally secure and care. So it is absolutely designed to be used by non-Aboriginal health professionals, so long as you do the training. And for me, it's about sincerely wanting to use it and embed it into your practice, you know, because for me, intention and motivation are big things around why people do things and, you know, why they choose to do things. So it's, are you going to use it for how it was intended? And it was intended to improve perinatal mental health outcomes. So, yeah, do the train, like when it does get to be across the board, absolutely do the training and absolutely do the e-learning and do the face-to-face training and absolutely keep in touch, you know, and we are there for you. The Baby Coming You Ready team is there for you to, if for any questions, concerns, anything. Yeah.
Wonderful.
But yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Valerie. And another one. So people know that it's not ready for everybody yet. So they asked this question. Until it is ready across all states, what can organisations and practitioners do now to incorporate into their screening? What should they be thinking about right now to incorporate into their screening work? So,
well,
Kirsty,
I know that it shouldn't be a tick box. You know, screening does have a purpose, and screening is there to identify women and families who need help, you know, who may be struggling. So there is a purpose to screening. So I don't think that screening should just be a tick box, you know. It should be on the back of relationship building and you know, having patience and time to understand the woman in front of you and what she may need. Yeah.
And I guess, so the question is what to do, how to do screening in a culturally safe way, is that right? If you can't.
Yeah, they're really saying, what a wonderful product. Is there anything I can think about right now, given it's not available to actually do?
So I think they can use the website, so they can use that to give to their mums and they can peruse that. They can use the website for resources. Currently, we only have WA-based resources, and I think it's mostly Metro, isn't it, Valerie? So it won't be used to interstate people. But I think when you're screening people, and especially Aboriginal people, doing some clinical yarning by yourself, just doing that social emotional well-being assessment, check how they're doing, ask them how they're feeling at home in all of these things, because social emotional well-being assessments aren't really, there's not a huge focus on it. It's mostly a focus on the little numbers that you do, like the K10 and the EPDS. You don't really necessarily need a piece of paper to buy some good care. You just have to be in tune with your patient and be there for them. Your mum.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Okay, we've got a final question that I'm going to ask to Valerie. As a nurse, so this is how can we advise new mothers that have advice from mothers or grandmothers that may be unsafe or not beneficial? You know, how do we do this in a way that is not, you know, dismissive of that strong set of relationships? Yeah, I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question, and I've actually come across this question before. And I think it goes back to just respect, because you do not want to come from your point of view and not value the Indigenous knowledge that, you know, our mums and grandmothers are passing down to us. And I think that you have to find a way where you can integrate the Indigenous knowledges and the clinical knowledge and have them be complementary to each other. You absolutely have to discuss, and it's not just enough to dismiss them out of hand. You actually have to go into that deeper. And even if that means bringing the nana with you or the mum with you into the clinic space, or having, you know, going outside and sitting under a tree and just talking about it, and let's say, let's do some, you know, let's do some knowledge sharing, and we can, you know, bounce off each other, and we can, because I really want to learn as well. Because you can't just dump, you know, you just can't just be in a community and have knowledge and learning be a one-way street and it's all coming from you and going into community, you know. We know that doesn't work. So it's all about finding a middle ground and having enough respect for that woman and her family and her culture and her community and her knowledge to say, look, we really need to get together and have a yarn about what you think is best and how I can integrate my knowledge and put the onus on you to actually have your service be complementary to community and you know, and not the other way around, because we know that doesn't work. Having said that, you know, a perfect example is co-sleeping. I know I've done, I have co-slept with my children, and I know that a lot of my family co-sleeps. But we know from a clinical and a mainstream and a systems perspective that co-sleeping isn't safe. But that's a real big collective statement as well, you know. So as much as we need to talk about safe sleeping, we also need to talk about safe co-sleeping, because we know that women are going to do it either purposefully or inadvertently, you know. So it's about doing it in a way that is respectful, and respectful to the woman and her mum and her nan, as well as, you know, giving that information that we can be complementary and not undermining. Because the last thing I would want is for the nana to be thinking that what she has to give in regards to supporting her granddaughter or her daughter is not important or valued. You know, so I think it's acknowledging your implicit bias, acknowledging that you don't know everything, and how can we come together respectfully and you know, share knowledge and ways of doing, you know. Yeah, but it's a hard question, it really is, and I think it's, you know, we're going to get the answers from lots of other people as well, but know your place in that community and know your, yeah, that your way of doing isn't always the best way, I suppose. Yeah, it's really tricky. I hope I've helped.
We're close to the end, and I just thought I want to ask one or two questions to really finalise. Given everything that you've learnt across your programs, what are the one or two key things that practitioners across the board, no matter what field they're in, should really be thinking about? You know, what are the most important things that you want people to take away from this around the perinatal stage, culturally responsive care, etc.? I know that's a big question, but I also know we want to make sure that a bunch of these people out there with such different professions can really take that away. So, Deb, I want to start with you with just the one or two things that are most important and to take away.
I think for me, you know, it's that continuity of care, having, you know, families be part of that decision-making process, you know, to build and empower themselves, to have happiness and to have hope for the future.
All right, thanks, Deb. And how about yourselves, Kirsty and Valerie? Kirsty, do you want to start first? Is there a key thing, one thing, two things that are really important that all practitioners need to take away from this?
I think all practitioners need to personally work on decolonizing their practice. So currently the medical system was built not for Aboriginal people, not for any person. It's built for it's built for white men, basically. And so you need to actively decolonize your beliefs and your practices in your practice. And secondly, I think a way to really do that is to ensure that you're listening and you respect, you're listening and you respect Aboriginal knowledge. So if your practice is in a particular area, like if you're in a hospital, you can access the Aboriginal health liaisons and officers. That your biggest source of cultural knowledge in your workplace. And I think people are really underutilizing our Aboriginal health liaisons and officers everywhere we go. So I think it's just important in your community to talk to someone within the Aboriginal community that you're in to ensure that you know the basic cultural protocols for that community. Yeah.
Right, thanks, Kirsty. And Valerie, just in the next 30 seconds, is there a final thing you want to say?
Really quickly, absolutely, yes. Learning, understanding, acknowledging the history of this country as the first step to decolonising the system and making it more culturally secure. Aboriginal people have not lived in a vacuum for 200 years. We've had so much crap happen to us. And what I know more than anything is that we are survivors. We are absolutely strong and resilient. So work with us, and more importantly, value what we bring to the system. You know, value all of the Aboriginal stuff and the women and men and children who come through the doors, you know. You know, we are the experts in what we need, and we need allies and accomplices, you know, to move forward and make change.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much. So thank you, Valerie, Kirsty, and Deborah. I just want to acknowledge everything that you do. It's such wonderful work. And thank you to everyone for attending online today. And see you next time, everyone. And everyone, take care.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.